I have a brother who lives in Cleveland. He called me Erev Shabbos while I was shopping. And he's speaking this Shabbos, this past Shabbos. And he wants to run by me what he's going to say. And it was such a beautiful vart that I decided I'm going to say it also. He said we discussed this, I think last week, that in the Sefer Torah, the space between Parshas Vayigash and Parshas Vayechi are very close together. Even though between most Parshas they're separated by a line, or sometimes a little more, a little less, depending on how many letter spaces. But there's a big space between Parshas, and between Parshas Vayigash and Vayechi is not a big space. So Rashi says, Lama Parshas Uz Stuma, why is this Parsha closed up? It's not open. It's not a big space. Because when Yaakov Avinu was nifter, when Yaakov Avinu passed away, nistemu einehem v'libam shel Yisrael mitzaras hashibud. The eyes and the hearts of Yidden were closed up because of the shibud, because of the hard work of the Galus Mitzrayim. Nistemu einehem v'libam shel Yisrael. So on a simple level, Parsha is closed up because their hearts were closed up. But my brother wanted to bring out a certain depth of why the Shibud of Mitzrayim is expressed in the Torah by having a parsha without a big space before it starts. Why specifically that? There's a famous Mesilas Yesharim in the beginning of the Sefer Mesilas Yesharim, in the Midah of Zahirus. He says as follows. He says, this is one of the tricks of the Yetzer Hara and his cleverness, to make work very, very, very difficult, to make it the people's jobs or people's responsibilities very, very, very heavy, so that they should not have any time to think and to look where they're going, where they're headed in life. Because he knows, the Yetzer Hara knows, that if people would just spend a little bit of time thinking, they would right away direct themselves in the right path. And he doesn't want people to direct themselves in the right path, so he makes sure that people don't have any time to think. And then he says, "V'harezu me'ein atzas paray harasha." And this is similar to the Eitzah of Paray. This is similar to what Paray did. That Paray said, in the end of Parashat Shemos, "Tichbat ha'avoda al ha'anashim." Let the men work hard. Make life difficult for them. Make them work hard. Why? So they shouldn't have time to think. Paray's goal was not to give them any time to think, and if they don't have time to think, then they won't have time to figure out ways to get out of Mitzrayim, or to put their lives together, or to organize any type of resistance. This is the answer. A lot of people are misspelled sometimes in the concentration camps or the ghettos. How come there wasn't more organized resistance? This is the answer. Tichbat ravayda lo anashim. They were so worn down and had such heavy loads, it takes a certain amount of creative energy to organize yourself. And sometimes a person can be so worked and so out of energy and so dried up that there's not even any time or peace of mind to organize yourself. And Paray, in the Parashas of Yetzias HaTzayim, Paray represents the Yetzer Hara. Paray is the force that comes against Klal Yisrael. The big force that comes against Klal Yisrael in all the years is the Yetzer Hara. So Paray represents the Yetzer Hara, and just like Paray, his goal, his method of keeping the Jews where he wanted them was to make them so busy that they have no time to think. The Yetzer Hara does the same thing. He makes us so busy that we have no time to think. Now Rashi says at the beginning of Parashas Vayikra that sometimes when Hashem is talking to Moshe in Parshas Vayikra, sometimes a parsha ends as a pei or a samach, a parsha ends, and then the next parsha starts, and you have no idea why it had to stop in the middle. Like if you read the first few psukim of Vayikra, it's about the karban oila, and then a few psukim later, it says the imen hatzayin karbanai, that's after a hefsek. What was the point of stopping? It doesn't even say sometimes afterwards, and vayidaber Hashem al Moshe leimer, it just like continues off. Hashem stops, and then Hashem continues talking, and like for no apparent reason. So Rashi says the reason why there's that space is litein revach bein parsha leparsha lehizvayne, is to give space between each parsha to be thoughtful about that parsha. You can't just have like information being shot at you in a, like a machine gun. You have to have the information comes your way, and then you have to have time to digest it. A little pause. And Rashi says, if from Hashem to Moshe he needed time to pause between one thing and the next, Kal v'chomer lehedyet, he says, Kal v'chomer, when a human being is teaching another human being, not a Hashem teaching Moshe, Kal v'chomer that we need time to think between one piece of information, one block of information and another. So we see, and in a Sefer Torah, those peis and samachs are spaces in the Sefer Torah as well. They're spaces. So we see that a space in the Sefer Torah represents stop, pause, and think a little bit. That's what it represents. In the Golos of Mitzrayim, as we see from this Mesilas Yesharim, the point of the work, and especially in the end of the parasha when the work got even harder, was don't think. Not having a chance to think, that's called Nistamu Einayim V'Libam. Their hearts, their eyes, meaning their knowledge, what they see, what they digest, and their hearts, meaning after it's absorbed into your heart, it becomes part of you, was stuffed up. They couldn't see and they couldn't think anymore. They're so focused on what they have to do, on the job of the shibud, that it's nistamu einayim v'libam. Their eyes and their hearts are closed up. So that's why the way that the shibud of Mitzrayim is expressed in the Torah is that there's no space between one parsha and the next. Because the whole purpose of a space between one parasha and the next is to give time to think. And the whole parasha's whole purpose in making them work was that they shouldn't have time to think. So how do you express no time to think, no space between one parasha and the next? You can't catch your breath. That's the shibud of Mitzrayim. An incredible, incredible thing. If you look at the very, very, very beginning of the redemption from Mitzrayim, of the Geula from Mitzrayim, you find the pasuk says, "Vayetze Moshe Elechav." Moshe went out among his brothers, "Vayar b'sivloisam," and he saw in their hard work. Now, if you think about it, the pasuk is a little funny. It should have said, the way Lashon Kodesh usually reads, it should have said, "Vayetze Moshe Elechav, Vayar es sivloisam." He saw their hard work. Not he. You say, I saw this person working hard. You don't say, I saw in this person working hard. What's bisiv loisim? In their hard work. What did he see in their hard work? It's a funny way of talking. It's from the first psukim of a chumash. We know it by heart. Like, we don't think about it. Maybe it's a little funny. Vayetze Moshe Alechov. Vayar. It should be vayar esiv loisim. What's vayar bisiv? In their hard work. So Rashi answers the question. Rashi says, Nasan eino v'libay. He focused his eyes on his heart, liyos meitzer aleihem, to care about them. Unbelievable. The same words that Rashi said that the shibud of Mitzrayim caused, that it was nistamu einayim v'libam, that their heart, their eyes and their hearts were closed up, that they didn't have that broadness to be able to have time to think, and that's what the shibud was, that's what the hard work caused, no time to think. The beginning of the geula from Mitzrayim starts with nasan eino v'libay. He took his time to think. He thought about the Yidden. He took time to think about things. Einov, his eyes, to see it and to realize what he's seeing, and then v'libay, that what he's seeing should affect him. It should absorb. It should be digested. So that's the progression. That's what we see by Yetzias Mitzrayim. Parsha Stuma, there's no Revach lehizbainim in Parsha leParsha, that's Nistimu Einayim v'Libam, there's no time to think, that's the hard work, no time to think, that's Parai, represents the Eitz Hara, no time to think, and the Geula starts with Moshe Rabbeinu, who took his time to think, to contemplate, to focus. So I want to think a little about thinking. An amazing thing. In those days, they were working very hard on their dragging bricks and everything, and they didn't have time to think. Today, we probably have less time to think than they had then in the Mitzrayim. And we do it to ourselves. It's an amazing thing. We do it to ourselves. We've effectively cut out any possibility of thinking. We did it to ourselves. It used to be that people were able to think while they were traveling. Then we put in tape recorders, CD players into our cars, so we radios. So in case, chas v'shalom, we have a few minutes to think, we try to redistract ourselves, we put on a tape or something, even if it's Torah, but you know, as long as we're not thinking, that's the main thing. You know, I'll listen to another speech, but just don't leave me alone with myself. You know, we don't like to think. And then if somebody's walking or by a bus stop or something, he doesn't have a radio, so Baruch Hashem, the cell phone was invented, and you could quickly make calls. You don't have to be alone and think for a second. Unnecessary. Palm Pilots, you know, if I have nobody to call, I can get myself busy. I've 24/7, not on Shabbos, but most of the week I have a way to distract myself. And there are people who get very stressed out on Shabbos because there's no way to distract themselves. It's very, very stressful sometimes. It's an amazing thing to me. The biggest riot to me of this whole Indian is shower radios. Excuse me for saying it. Shower, like, the one thing they couldn't take away from us, when a person's in the shower, he's alone. No. You have to have a radio in the shower. Don't give me a second to think. You have to think about this. There's something, we have to think about this thinking problem. What is it? We seem to have like an unstoppable goal over here, I'm saying as a society, to make sure we don't think. Why are we so afraid of thinking? Why are we so into distracting ourselves from thinking? The Mesillas Yesharim says that if we'll just spend a little time thinking, it'll have massive results. So why don't we spend time thinking? So I got to know over the years, I got to know a Mashgiach in Eretz Yisrael. His name is Rav Leichter. And the first time I met him, he was in America visiting, and I asked him a certain question, a certain Musar question, and he basically told me, if I have to just say it in short, he basically told me that my entire approach to Avodas Hashem is completely wrong. Basically. So, I was a little shocked and taken aback. And I said, like, okay, now what do I do? I was like, see, he read me a letter. He read me a letter from the Alter von Kelm. I think this is such a deep letter. I think this is a... I'll say over parts of the letter. I think when you hear this letter, you'll see why the Balei Musar were the most brilliant psychologists. The most brilliant psychologists with the Chochmas HaTorah, the healthy psychology. So the Alter writes like this. The Alter von Kelm was a Talmud, a student of Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. Rachel Salanter was the originator of what we know as the Musar movement. And the Alter from Kelm, Simcha Zissel from Kelm, he started a yeshiva built on the principles of Rachel Salanter. And he was a very, very close Talmud of his. And he was a giant of a man. A giant. Him and his whole family. There was a whole family of Talmidim of Rachel Salanter. Giants. Incredible giants. You're talking about... people, him, I think it was his nephew or something, the types of people that when he was on his deathbed and he realized that he wasn't going to live any longer, he called the taxi company to arrange a ride home for his wife from his funeral. Imagine his thoughtfulness, because his wife had foot problems. He didn't want her to have to walk. It was Friday and he saw that he was going to pass away right before Shabbos. So he wanted to make sure that she would have a ride on a horse and carriage, you know, a taxi, whatever kind of taxis they had. He arranged a guy to take her home from the funeral. That's how, it's not just the thoughtfulness, it's the menuchas hadas. I think when someone's about to die, they have other things on their mind than how's my wife going to get home from my funeral. It's like, you know, we sometimes forget to think of how our wives are going to get home from anything that we're in our daily life. And this is like, that's the type of family we're talking about, the Alter von Kelm. So he says like this, I'm ready now, he says, Ra'isi legalois ata. I'm ready to reveal now a secret that was hidden by me for 20, maybe 30 years, k'meduma karev l'lamed shana, close to 30 years, I have this secret. Imagine, I've been holding on to this secret. It's been sitting inside of me. The way Rav Leifta told me was that he was pregnant with the secret for 30 years. I haven't told anyone for 30 years. I was in Zagar, the name of a place, and Adoneinu Moreinu v'Rabbeinu Rabbi Yisrael Salanter was there. The great Rabbi Yisrael Salanter was there. And it was Rosh Hashanah time, and he made his own minyan of him and his Talmidim, and he said something to me, only to me, nobody else heard it, that the nivhalti mizeh ma'oid ma'oid, I was extremely overwhelmed from it. I was nispoh from it. Ki lo nishma kazois, because you don't hear things like that. It was like an incredible thing. And I've never seen anything in any sefer like it. I'm not going to say what it is. It's letter Yud Aleph in the Chachma Musa. But I want to talk about how he reacted to the secret. And he says, but since I understood, umachmas ki hivanti, since I understood that a person will not understand it. If I tell it to someone, he will not understand to be as amazed as I was amazed. And I have to be honest, I have to be maida. It's a little embarrassing. But I read the secret, I was not amazed. I was like, okay, very nice to our tire. I didn't see what was so incredible. And he says, he's talking about me. Since I know that people, if I'll tell it to them, they just won't know, they won't be intelligent enough to be amazed from it like I was amazed, I didn't tell it to anybody until I found the right place. Except one time, Pam Achas, I tried to tell it to an Adam Gadol, who Mamashi was an Adam Gadol, except that he didn't learn Musar the way we learn Musar, and I saw that he didn't understand what I was talking about. So why? Why is it that such an incredible thing, we could read it, and we don't understand what the big deal, we just don't understand it. Why is that? Is it a chisar in our intellect, or is it something else? So the Alter says it's something else. It's not a chisar in our intellect. He says the reason why someone who doesn't understand it, it won't have any effect on him at all. Because to absorb this message, tzarech ha'adam l'shanayz darkoi mikol v'kai, a person has to change everything. If a person would understand it, it would force him to change his life. And people don't want to change their lives. There's a resistance to change. People don't want to change their lives. And therefore, lo yaniach liboy l'shmoy advarim nayroim ke'ela, he won't allow himself to listen. Now that's an amazing thing, a secret in psychology about the subconscious of a person that the Alter reveals to us. And you see it sometimes, that you could hear something, a story, something, and it has such a profound effect. And you tell it to someone, and the person's like, very nice, very nice. And you see, like, nothing. Nothing. Brick wall. Nothing. Is it because the person is not so smart? No. It's because sometimes if you tell something, I'll give you an example. We had, thanks to the mikveh committee, we had Rabbi Wade speak in the hotel a couple of weeks ago. So he spoke. It was very, very inspiring and had very, very strong points. But I could imagine that the more frum a person was, the more funny he thought he was. He thought Rabbi Wade was. But if you weren't frum, and therefore what he was saying is a little bit of a challenge, I can imagine not that you had answers to the challenge. That wouldn't be the approach. According to the author, the approach would be like, I don't see what was so funny about him. I don't think his points were so strong. That's the natural reaction of a person. The natural reaction of a person who doesn't want to accept something is not to say, I hear what you're saying, but I don't want to accept it. That sounds like a cop-out. Rather, he's not saying much. That's what a person does. A person's subconscious, an amazing thing, it's an amazing secret about the psyche to know about a person. That it's not that knowledge is not, it's not like numbers that 1 + 1 = 2. Knowledge does not work that way. Knowledge is a very subjective thing. And a person won't allow himself to be amazed by something if he's not prepared to deal with what that amazement is going to make him do. I had this feeling this week with the tsunami that hit. I was talking to Rafael about it for a long time. So the death toll now is somewhere in the neighborhood of 100,000. 150. Rahman al-Islam. It's a mind-boggling thing. And a person is mechuyev to think about it. It's a beferish pasuk. We found a pasuk that says that a person is mechuyev to think about it. The pasuk says in Tzfania, Paragimel. It says, beferish pasuk, Tzfania, Paragimel. Hechrati goyim, I have cut off goyim. Noshamu pinoisam, their towers, their cities were desolate. Hecharavti chutzaisam, I have destroyed the outskirts of their cities. Mibli oiver, nobody's left. Nitzdu areyem, their cities were destroyed, also lashon of destruction. Mibli ish me'ein yoshev, there's nobody there. Mamash, a description of what happened last week. Whole cities wiped out completely. So what's our reaction to it? So there's a lot of things to say. That's a whole shir in itself, how to react to such a thing. But just one thing that the Navi says, Amarti, Hashem says, I said, Achtiri Yoisi, just fear me. Tikhi Musar, take Musar from it. That's what the Navi says. Rashi says, Hevesi Puranas Alo Akim, I brought tragedy on Goyim, Kadesha Tiru, so that you should see Vitiru, and you should start fearing Hashem. So that means that when a tragedy happens, it's callous and wrong to say, it's on the other side of the world, what do I care about it? That's callous and wrong. The right thing to do is to be affected by the magnitude of what happened. And if you think about it, what happened is the extent of 50 September 11ths. 50 September 11th still does not equal the amount of calamity that happened in one day last week. 50. Except in September 11th, it was easy to think about because they were bad guys. So it's not so hard. There are bad guys, and we're going to protect ourselves, and we're going to kill them. It's very easy to think. There are no bad guys here. It's a very uncomfortable thing to think about. We actually might have to think about tikhu musar. We have to think about steiging. We have to think about it. It's a very uncomfortable thing. And we don't like to think about it. Why don't we like to think about it? Because we don't like to think about it because there's a resistance to what the ramifications of that thought is. If I think about it, I might have to make changes, and none of us like making changes. A person naturally resists any change. People feel very comfortable where they are. I told my wife this morning, I'm speaking about thinking. What do you know about thinking? So she said, don't do too much of it, it makes you nervous. That's exactly what I'm speaking about. People are afraid to think. So according to this Alter von Kelm, it comes out that it's not that despite the fact that the Basilis Yisharim says that it could have such amazing effects, still we don't think. That's not the case. It's because the Basilis Yisharim says it will have such big effects. That's why we don't think. We're scared of the effects of thinking. The Basilis Yisharim says if a person will just think a little bit, it will change his life. That's exactly what we don't want to do. We don't want to change our lives. So we don't think. So the question is, the obvious question is, and if the altar was here, I think we would ask him that question. So how come you were so amazed? How come that subconscious resistance to change, how come it didn't affect you? The altar says, Rabbi Shlomo Salanter told me something. I was amazed, but no one else would be amazed because they don't want to change. And what about you? You're different than every other human being. How come you don't want to change? How come you want to change? So the altar addresses that question. And he says an incredible thing, and I think it's a key that we can unlock the power of thought with this key. He says, V'anoichi hivanti zais. I did understand what Rabbi Yisrael said. I understood it. Ki ba'avoinoisai haravim, because of my many averis, ani murgal, I'm accustomed that what I do doesn't necessarily reflect what I think. I'm accustomed that what I think is right is not necessarily what I do. I'm not such a big tzaddik. And since what I think is not necessarily what I do, so therefore I'm not so scared to think. Because I could think A and I can still do B, so it doesn't threaten me. That's what the Alter writes about himself. An amazing thing. He writes, the reason why I could be amazed about things is because it doesn't threaten me. Because who says I'm going to change my life? Okay, that's the right thing to do. Who says I'm going to change my life? That's what the Alter von Kelm, the Heilig Alter von Kelm, writes about himself. It comes out, according to this, an amazing thing. It is a tremendous advantage to hypocrisy. We always look at hypocrisy as a terrible midah, and it is. But to a certain extent, the ability to say, fine, let me think about what's right. I'm not going to do it. I'm going to keep living my life the way I'm living it now, but let me at least know what's right. Could be very helpful in directing our thoughts in the right direction. So if that's true, so that means it might be a good idea for people to say, I'm going to spend a little time thinking. I'm not being mishabed myself. I'm not demanding of myself to do anything based on what I'm thinking about. I'm going to think. I'm going to listen. I'm going to think about what's right and wrong. And I'm not going to do anything about it. And that's what this Rav Leichter, when he told me that my whole Derech and Avodas Hashem is completely wrong, he said, I told it to you. Now don't do anything about it. Don't change anything. And you'll see, years will pass, months will pass, opportunities will present themselves, things will be digested differently. Slowly, little change at a time, slowly but surely you'll make the changes that are necessary. That was his advice. Be a hypocrite, he told me. I told you what the right thing is. Don't act on it. Because if you act on it, you're not going to hear it anymore. And you're going to stop understanding it. Because as soon as you have to do it, you don't understand it so well anymore. A person has an amazing, amazing thing. A person has the ability to consciously fool himself and then to be fooled. A person has the ability, I'll prove it to you, a person has the ability to say, I'm going to fool myself. He himself knows the trick, and then he's fooled. If I would tell you that I'm going to fool you, then you're not fooled. But I'm going to prove to you that it's possible that I could plan to fool myself, and I will be fooled. And that is, there are very many people, myself included, who have certain watches or clocks set 5 minutes fast. Now, I myself set my clock 5 minutes fast. Because when I wake up in the morning, I want to, for a second, trick myself into thinking that it's later. Now, I know it's not later, because I myself set it 5 minutes fast. But still, there are many, many people that set their clocks 5 minutes fast because it affects them, the trick they played on themselves, even though they themselves know that it's a trick. So you see an amazing thing about the power of the human mind, that we could plan to trick ourselves, and the trick still works. Incredible. My shver was here for Shabbos last Shabbos. He told me that he saw that Rav Shmuel Birnbaum's watch is set 5 minutes fast. Rav Shmuel Birnbaum could trick himself. An amazing thing. That's incredible. In this week's parsha, Klal Yisrael says, "Nelchana derech shloishes yomim b'midbar." Moshe Rabbeinu tells Pari, "Let's go for 3 days into the desert." So Rav Dessler writes, "We think in a simple translation, let's go 3 days into the desert. That way, Pari will give us permission to go, because if not, you know, we're tricking Pari. Let us go for 3 days, and then once we're in the midbar, we'll run away." Rav Dessler writes, "No, it has nothing to do with tricking Pari. It has to do with tricking ourselves." He says, "The Jews, it's very frightening to leave Mitzrayim, even though it's horrific conditions over there. But it's very frightening to leave a place that you, the place that you know. It's very frightening to be in a new place." So the Jews, they said it to themselves, "We're going to leave Mitzrayim for 3 days. I'm not making any demands on myself. I'm going to leave for 3 days. Then I'm going to come back." They knew they were tricking themselves. Moshe Rabbeinu, the Klal Yisrael, they knew they were leaving for good. But sometimes it helps just to say, "I'm going for 3 days. I'll be back in 3 days." And then in 3 days, you'll decide to go for another 3 days. It's a planned trick, but it works. It's like the watch 5 minutes fast. And the same thing is true about his bininess, about thinking. Not only could we tell ourselves that we're going to be a hypocrite about what we're thinking about, but we could tell ourselves that we're going to be a hypocrite even though we know that we're not really capable of knowing what's right and doing something different. We know that it's going to bother us. We know it's going to affect us. It's still a good idea. It's still a good idea to say, "I'm going to spend time thinking. I'm not going to listen to Paray, who's trying to tich b'dor avodah anashim. I'm going to think. And I'm going to reach certain conclusions, and they might not be so comfortable, because it might reveal things about my direction in life that I'm not so happy with, or about the way I act, or whatever it is that I'm not so happy with. So I'm going to not do anything about it. Now, I know that eventually I'm going to do something about it. It still helps. I'm just going to think about it. I'm not going to do anything about it." It still helps to open a person's mind. It still helps to allow a person to think. Chazal tell us that the day that the first makkah started, makkah's done, the avodah stopped. From the beginning of the makkah, Klal Yisrael weren't working anymore. So I wonder, according to this pshat of the Mesillas Yesharim, I wonder if it was necessary that the Yidden should have a year of not working so hard before they could leave Mitzrayim. Leaving Mitzrayim is a big madrega for Klal Yisrael. They reached a very high madrega that night, and then subsequently when they came to Har Sinai. It's a very big madrega. And who knows if it was part of the plan that they should have a year to think, before they go. To digest, to think about things. To think about the purpose of life. To think about that I'm here to serve Hashem. You know, these people were changing their entire lives. They were living like Egyptians until then. And now they have to change their entire life a god that they had only heard about in family legends. You know, most of the Yidden, they were in a very low madrega, and they have to change their lives and become subservient to a god that Moshe Rabbeinu walked in and told them exists. And they have a lot. They have to make big changes. So Chazal tell us they had a year to think first, to absorb, to digest, to focus before they went out of Mitzrayim. And we also need that. We need time to think. We live in such a fast-paced world, but I'm afraid that you know, and I see in myself that a year passes, another year passes, another year passes, and time is not slowing down. As a matter of fact, we live in a type of society that things just keep speeding up. You know, now we stand in front of a microwave and say, "What's with this thing? It's going so slow." You know, the microwave is a miracle. You could do in 10 minutes what used to take an hour, and it's still not fast enough for us. We live in a very fast-paced society. We got to slow down and think. I was thinking of a few examples. I remember a couple of months ago, there was a certain program or something on NPR on the radio that I enjoyed listening to. A certain time I had it on my schedule that I knew I was in the car then, and I liked listening to it. And every couple of months, they do a fundraiser on public radio. They do a fundraiser. And they spend the whole time talking about how much money they made and they should call in and you should send in. And I remember I was listening to the radio and I got so angry. Like, come on, let's go. Where's the program? Like, what do you want? Just hours and hours of, like, we met our goals. We didn't meet our goals. I wasn't interested. It's not such a bad thing sometimes if we turn off the radio. Not such a terrible. Like, what's going to happen if we spend a few minutes driving with nothing on in the car? Nothing. Just ourselves, just getting to know ourselves a little bit. At a chasana, I'm just telling you the experiences that I have about being resistant to being alone. At a chasana, someone sits down by a table, and he realizes he's sitting alone. He would get very nervous. Right away, look for a friend, someone to talk to. People get very nervous just like sitting alone. What are you so nervous about? What's so terrible? Sit alone for a few minutes. It's not the end of the world. Sit alone. Sit by the chasana, look around, and think a little. We get so nervous. I don't know if we're afraid that people are going to think that no one wants to talk to us. I'm not sure exactly what it is. But nobody likes to be alone. What's it to stand around and not talk to somebody? It could be such an amazing thing. And what do you do? So now I'm thinking. So now what do? A couple of people that I know that became psychologists or therapists or social workers told me the same thing. They told me that most of what's accomplished, when people go to therapy, most of what's accomplished is that the person, it's a forum for the person to talk. And that makes most people to figure things out for themselves. And most people know what's bothering them deep down. And for most people, it's healthy to just talk. So you pay $150 an hour, or however much it is, and you do something that you really could do without the therapist. A person could sit down, and all of us need that type of therapy. A person could sit down and he could have a conversation with himself. What does he need some stranger to listen in for? A person could sit down and he could talk to himself. Just start talking about anything to yourself, about anything. What's doing at home, the kids, the job. Just start talking to yourself, going through things. You'll see one thing leads to the next. The machshavas of a person direct him to certain places. So it's a healthy thing. I think if a person spends time talking to himself in private, spends time talking to himself, he'll reveal to himself what's bothering him. The things that are bothering him will come out. They'll rise up to the surface. And then he could deal with it or not deal with it, whatever he wants to do, but the power is there. They say to Shem Raputna, they say the following thing. They say Raputna said that he was, I'm not sure if he himself was there or if he had heard about it, that the Alter from Slabodka, Raputna learned in Slabodka. The Alter from Slabodka was once sitting around with a few of his close Talmidim, and he started thinking aloud. He started saying like this. We all know that the neshama of a person is on a higher madriga than an angel, than a malach. Because the neshama is part of Hashem. It's a chelek eleka. It's a piece of Hashem. So that means that if a person gets a revelation of his own neshama, if a person's neshama appears to them, if a person's able to think and think and think until he feels like he's communicating with his neshama, he's touching a deeper part of himself, that's a higher madriga than having Eliyahu HaNavi appear to you. Eliyahu HaNavi, he's just a malach, or a person, but he's just a malach. But our neshama is a part of the Ribbono Shel Olam. And if we would be able to think and spend time, even without the tichbat or avodah al-nashah, to take time out to think, we could reveal that holy part of us. There's a very, very holy part of us inside. And we could reveal that part of us, and we could identify with it, and we could base our lives on it. And that's a much, much, much higher madrega, he says. He was just thinking aloud to his Talmidim than even Gilui Eliyahu.